world is changing fast. New technologies are impacting how we think about products, services, and the way we live our lives. Nowhere is this trend more present than in financial services, where new business models and customer expectations are changing our conceptions about banking, finance, and the very nature of money. Welcome to Rebank, a visionary podcast about banking, fintech, and the future. The future of banking is here. Hello and welcome to Rebank. I'm your host, Will Beeson. Today we're thrilled to be joined by Duane Blomstrom and Liz Lumley. Duane and Liz are fintech superstars. Duane was previously head of sales at Moneyga, one of Iceland's best-known fintechs. She's now an investor and advisor in a number of fintech companies, including Authentix, a company improving the way banks do KYC and authentication. Liz ran Startup Bootcamp's London FinTech program in 2015. She's now Managing Director of Thought Leadership at Rainmaking, a part owner of Startup Bootcamp and a startup advisor in its own right. Both Duane and Liz are very active in the FinTech world and have a lot of insight into what's happening in the sector today. Today's conversation focuses on the future of collaboration between startups and incumbents. It draws on both Duane's and Liz's experiences helping fintechs engage with incumbents. As always, connect with us on Twitter, at Rebank Podcast. Check us out on Facebook, LinkedIn, or our website, bankingthefuture.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. Please welcome Duane Blomstrom and Liz Lumley. Liz Lumley and Duane Blomstrom, welcome to Rebank.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You guys both have extensive experience supporting fintech startups and engaging with incumbent organizations. Duane, tell us briefly what it was like to head sales for a fintech startup selling to banks as early as 2010.
That is very early. That's way back when, in the prehistoric times of financial technology. Right. So what was it like? It was absolutely mental. We lived on a plane because once you win Finovate, everyone and their dog would like to invite you over to look at your technology firsthand. We didn't know any better. So just managing our pipeline has been a very intensive exercise that took us a couple of years to figure out. Meaning as soon as Moneyga won Best of Show at Finovate, we got 200 invitations from various banks around the world, of which we sold to one over the next year or so. So that's probably, I would say that that's a good ratio. We probably did well compared to others. Yes, so, but it was a long, long road. So don't forget, Moneyga didn't start with zero. They already had a bank on board. And by the time they got the second one, it took us about 500,000 miles in the air and never seeing our children. But, you know, I can go into the details of the story later. But it was fun and mental at the same time.
Yeah, so, it's kind of, I guess, exactly that I would love to start from. So if in kind of circa 2010, you were talking to 200 banks to sell to one, was that because Moneyga as a fintech startup wasn't structured in a way to properly engage with incumbent banks? Was it because incumbent banks were still kind of in an exploratory phase related to all things fintech?
Okay, let me clarify. First of all, by the time I left, we had sold to 28. I don't suppose that, the total number that we talked to didn't, you know, outgrow 300 or so. And this is a PSA for all new fintechs, quote unquote. There are no thousands of banks if you're selling to retail. There are only a few hundred in total, so that you're clear and don't Wikipedia for too long. Anyways, so from the few hundreds that we've seen, we sold to 28, so about a 10%, so that's not too bad. At the same time, I left, like you said, almost 5 years later, and we did 28 banks in the 4 years. Also not too bad at all. I've seen companies sell for 36 to 48 months, which is what they say incumbent banks take to do a biggish deal. And it's very much, it's also a question of what you sell. I'll at least expand on that because I think that's very interesting. It doesn't necessarily make a difference how big of a technology piece it is that you're selling, although I'm sure that back-end, if it existed, back-end systems, they would take slightly longer. But
the core banking system,
although we don't have a lot of examples of people that have tried to sell that, but I'm hoping that it takes longer. But I was talking to one of the old quote-unquote fintechs, meaning, I don't want to give a name, but a really, really big technology giant the other day, and they were saying one of their core banking systems may be sold by one of their key account managers every 5 or 8 years. That is an even lengthier sales cycle. But anyway, so this is not too long. It actually was at speed as compared to the industry. What was your initial question again?
From the beginning of that process, circa 2010, to the time you left Moneyga, was there a change, a development in the way that incumbent banks looked at fintech and or were willing to engage with fintechs?
No, is the short answer. I think they say they are much more willing to engage. I think that they want to engage much more, but I think they engage in precisely exactly the same fashion, and they get to sign on the dotted line almost just as often, in my experience.
Liz, you were very recently involved with Startup Bootcamp FinTech and InsurTech, and I believe one of the areas of the business that you looked after was the development of your ecosystem, which in part includes a number of incumbent organizations that effectively sponsor the program and have specific goals in doing so. What has your experience been in dealing with incumbent institutions as it relates to engagement with fintech startups?
Well, I think probably maybe I should do the long answer, and this is kind of influenced by what Duana was talking about. In 2007, at a former employer, I ran a system selection for a large hedge fund in London for an operational risk system, and it took 18 months. Actually, it took more than 18 months. I left the company after 18 months, and the process was still going on. And this is where the head of operational risk knew what he wanted on day one, and it's still, that's how long it takes for these large organizations to buy these products. And traditional financial technology companies, IBMs, they're used to that. They're set up for that. You know, a big bank can send IBM a 100-page legal document, and it's not going to phase them. When the world started to become fintech, and the world became unbundled, and there's all these new entrants coming into the market, things had to change. And when you talked about earlier in your question about it being mutually beneficial, the relationship between a smaller fintech startup and a large established bank needs to be mutually beneficial, and both sides are learning. So we have a phrase at Startup Bootcamp about that there's a difference between an appetite for innovation and a capability. So when we look for a partner for one of the programs, we actually say to them, if one of our startups came to do a pilot with you, how long would that take? And if they said, well, 18, 24 months, we're like, you know, you're probably not going to work as a partner. You know, our startups can't wait that long. I was talking to an insurance startup from the 2016 program a week ago, and he said he's dealing with a large bank in the UK, and he just wishes they would say no instead of dragging out this process, which is basically killing them. So what needs to happen on both sides is this. What is the relationship going to be? Because we're very honest with our banking partners and any large financial institution that the startups that come into Startup Bootcamp are not going to have a commercial relationship with you right away. They're way too small. What they want is a pilot or a proof of concept. On the other side, you know, there are banks that are looking for innovative solutions to specific problems. So, you know, they want on both sides. And the startups themselves need to understand how to go through bank procedures, and that's something that we help them with. And then the bank has to decide that, why are they having this partnership with a startup? And it's probably not because they're going to install it in a commercial way. They're going to learn from that partnership. What is the tech trends coming up the pipeline? What are the business model trends? What are they seeing? Learning just how to deal with a startup as opposed to an IBM. It's a whole cultural change. Learning how to develop products in that sort of lean methodology, agile way, are all things that the large bank can learn from that partnership that don't include installing it to millions of their clients. And so that's what they're looking for. Our startups are looking for the validation of a pilot or a proof of concept that will validate their product and their business model. And that's the mutually beneficial relationship that we try and work at Rainmaking and Startup Bootcamp.
Mm-hmm. I guess that kind of makes sense that the startup in seeking that validation from a large bank, because I believe most of the the incumbent banks that are involved with Startup Bootcamp are tier one banks. Mm-hmm. In receiving that validation from a tier one bank, a startup can then go more easily sell its product to a tier two bank or a tier three bank. Are those potentially better places for startups to start?
You know, I don't... What do you mean by, like, well, how would you class? What's a tier three bank?
Smaller
I mean,
ones.
Smaller ones. You know, a small startup is looking to validate their product. And a lot of the startups we see in Startup Bootcamp are not consumer facing, so they're not looking for millions of customers. They're B2B. They're looking to have a bank eventually as a client. So it depends on how they're going to grow their business and how they're going to scale it up. It's hard to say.
Duane, I feel like you have a view here.
I do. I have a burning view. No, size doesn't matter. Another public service announcement does not matter. Big banks take a long time, of course. To give you an example, one of the first banks I wrote down on a piece of paper when I was considering taking the job at Meniga was Santander. And I left Meniga having closed that sale, but not signed that contract 4.5 years later. Not abnormal. It was Santander, which wasn't even buying technology, so it was groundbreaking that we even sold to them. But with that said, that was not the only bank that was in that situation. On that same list, there were banks that closed with Meniga after I left. And that was the length of the engagement. Doesn't mean that you had an active sales process for that long, but you absolutely had that length of engagement. And also, really important is, an organization of more than 50, 100 people, in many ways, behaves like an organization of 50,000 people. And in some cases, you're gonna have to do a lot more hand-holding and relationship building to be very elegant. In the smaller bank's case, a credit union, a small insurer that wants to break into the market, then you will do with the big bank. There are different challenges. If you have a humongous organization, you're going to be navigating the culture. If you have a tiny organization, you're going to navigate egos and education. Whatever it is, there's no guarantee that tier two or tier three institutions are going to take any less time than the incumbents. And this, it's critical, I think, for investors in our space to understand that this is the length of things. Unless we're going to be able to completely break all silos in all big organizations, it's going to take us this long. And maybe it's a question of us educating our guys to move faster, which is one of the reasons I've been doing mentoring for Startup Bootcamp and Techstars and others for this long, and also one of the reasons why I've recently turned this into a commercial enterprise. I just think the more we educate them, the more we empower them to know what they're navigating, the faster it's going to be, and in turn, they're going to be, I hope, teaching those banks how to move faster and how to react faster, because it is a them versus us mentality. I was just writing about this the other day. Startups almost expect to be treated a certain fashion in fintech. They are very grateful and happy that they are getting engaged with. I find that absolutely bizarre. It's as much their duty, as Lee said, to be qualifying the bank as it is the banks to be qualifying them. This is something that they need to do in common. It's very unlikely that whatever it is that they brought to the bank day one is going to be what they keep selling to the bank down the line. So if they want to build something with that bank, it better be that they've managed to qualify each other. I was saying this to Memento that I won Finovate with the other day in our kind of after show, what do we do now in terms of sales? And I gave them a long list of what to ask the two or three first really interested banks. And they were slightly iffy. They're a young startup. They don't feel like they should ask questions. But unless they do, they're going to be mired in a process that could take forever, as Lee said. And that doesn't help them either of the parties in any which way. So
does all this suggest that banks recognize a benefit, a value add from certain fintech propositions out there and have a good faith interest in buying some of these solutions? It's more of a bureaucratic and an administrative issue when it comes to actually pulling the trigger?
I mean, it depends on the size of the startup. I mean, anything a bank is going to buy has to meet their needs, whether they buy it from a small company or IBM. It has to be something that they need, some problem they need to solve. When you're dealing with, you know, what we consider fintech startups right now, They have the ROI that banks have to look at is what I said before, what they're going to learn from this process. what is the technology that's, how was this product developed in a way that they don't develop products in-house? Those are the things that they have to look at. I don't know of any large bank that's going to buy a tiny seed level four-person startup's product. It's not going to happen.
Anymore, maybe.
I don't know.
Our first sales, we were six people in the company. Nobody thought we were necessarily more. I mean, we would say under 20, who doesn't do marketing?
Yeah.
But with that said, they knew full well if they did enough due diligence, it were six. It's just a question of the technology was at that point so valuable and necessary, mm-hmm. and there was nowhere else to get it that I keep coming back to this. We have a huge inflation these days.
Isn't that the nature of the Manega product, that it was a white labeled customer facing app that they could put on top? It's not something they had to do a lot of installation with.
Yes and no. It's actually a very core middleware product, in the sense of yes, it gives very immediate clear value to the customer, but at the same time they had to hook their transactions into it. Mm-hmm. That is a big deal, as you know, to the bank. In some cases, they didn't even go to evaluate that risk that much because the customer need was too great. But in most cases, they have done that evaluation, and it was, six, seven, eight people. It's solid. It's built correctly from the ground up, and that's probably part of it as well. Fintech grew with technology. Technology is not yet anything. So my mister is in .NET. So I hear a lot about architecture. I hear a lot about pair programming. I hear a lot about whether programmers should have an ethical duty in the future or not. And, I come from a background of 20 years of selling software, and so I've heard all sorts of, I've seen it grow. Realistically, it's not yet mature enough for banks to be convinced that some parameters, there's no standards, there's no huge industry standards that you can kind of tick some boxes about and be done that, and speed the process. Anymore. So essentially a bank has to believe that whatever they're being brought has been built on pylons of solid material, which is very rarely the case. It's most likely that two or three guys have had an idea and they started working on it, which is exactly what the banks would like to be doing if they could avoid their processes and so on. So the tension exists also because that is the stage, I believe, where technology is at. So it's not only cultural, it's also a physical limitation of what computer science can do so far.
No, it's interesting. So it sounds like, to an extent, there's a gap between small startups with interesting fintech propositions and large incumbents that can buy them, at least when we're talking about B2B propositions, stuff that sits a bit lower down the stack in terms of bank core architecture. Certainly some companies have been able to bridge that gap. And I guess the question for you guys, and maybe this is a way to get into some of the work that both of you are doing, what's the solution, or what are the solutions for fintech companies to more meaningfully engage with incumbents?
That's something that we look at Rainmaking and Startup Bootcamp, because it's kind of a lot about how Rainmaking was formed, which is we kind of see ourselves as that bridge between corporates and startups. And this was based on the work that we did at Startup Bootcamp with the corporate partners. So the London FinTech Program, Lloyds Banking Group, were one of the corporate partners, and working with the startups and being that person in between. I mean, some of the, you know what? No one knows. Honestly, the answer is no one really knows. There have been some interesting stories I've heard. So for example, Wells Fargo in the US, they have, the innovation lab. They have a separate innovation lab as part of the bank, which is actually separate from the bank. And so people from other parts of the bank, if they want to work with a startup, they can go to the innovation lab and say, we really want to work with the startup. And the P&L for that project and that pilot comes out of the innovation lab and not out of the bank business, which makes that a lot easier and quicker for that pilot process to happen. Other banks' innovation labs aren't necessarily set up that way. The innovation lab is kind of that open door for the startup to get in, but the process doesn't end there. That's the beginning. And once they're in any bank's innovation lab, they need to then find a business sponsor at somewhere else in the bank to pay for that pilot. And that's when issues come in. And those issues, come down to culture, procurement, procedure. There are 50 people in any bank that are going to say no to this project. And that's where all the problems happen. So in terms of working with a bank to ensure that engagement is more successful is a procedure. And it's not magic. You know, there was an attitude, I think, with some banks a few years ago that we'll just open the door, have an innovation lab, startups will walk in, and magic will happen. And that's not the way innovation works. It takes a lot of hard cultural change inside any large, complex organization for these things to happen. And what we're actually finding now at Rainmaking is one of the biggest blockers we're seeing is with the innovation labs and not with the other parts of the bank, because we're coming in and saying, you know what, we think that you're going about this the wrong way, and this is a procedure we think works that will help you engage with startups. And they look at us and say, it took us 3 years to get this budget to do this program. We're not changing it now. So even the innovation lab is becoming entrenched in their politics and their place in the bank and their budgets and the lots of different fiefdoms. So, you know, ultimately people can talk about tech trends, people can talk about great ideas, people can talk about innovation. Cultural change and communication is the biggest barrier for any large organization. And that's one of the things that we help with at Rainmaking.
Exactly, culture. So my solution is, this is how I'm going to fix financial technology. I have a two-pronged solution. Part one is emotional banking. The reason I left Manigao was so that I put emotional banking on the map, get a method out of it that I can then maybe kind of outsource to other people that could more readily do this in many, many banks at the same time. And this is what it's going to fix. It's going to fix the culture issue. It's going to make people so excited and so passionate and so in love with their brand that they're going to want to help that consumer. They're going to have all these ethos that the civilized and the atoms have. And then all of a sudden they're going to engage faster and life will be perfect. That's from the banking side. So that's one way in which I'm going to fix it. The other way in which I'm going to fix it, and I'm really excited to announce this, is I have, together with a couple of friends, and nobody knows this, you guys are the first to hear it, so here goes. I'm a little bit nervous to even announce it.
Drum roll.
I know. It's, we've started something called Fin Winners. And Fin initially stands for Finovate, but it can stand for anything. It can stand for financial services, fintech. What we do is we help teams win for a certain amount of time, a project, goal. In Finovate's case, it's very simple. We train them in a method that I think is amazing. I was going to say kicks ass, but I'm not sure if that's really okay for the radio.
Yes.
Or not. Yes. All right. So that's radio safe. So kick ass method, make sure for a limited amount of time, a few weeks, that they do product, they do sales, they do marketing, they do strategy. They get really, really trained, intensively bootcamped. At the end of it, they go to Finovate, they win. As is the case with the company that I coached last, called Memento. If they don't win, at the end of these few weeks, they are left accelerated to the nth degree. Cost them money. It's not the free mentorship they're going to get out of incubators. It is, however, I hope, loads and loads of value. So really big names in it as well, which is really exciting, because these are people who have eaten the grain of fintech from the get-go. Loads of people in the fintech mafia and friends. So we have Alessandro Hatami, who's agreed to be part of this, Einar Gustafsson, Devi Mohan, Andra Sonea, Dave Gerbino, Rob Finlay. I mean, really, really big names in the industry who will be local coaches. So really excited about this. This is going to fix startups and make them really fast and really awesome when they meet these banks who have just recently been remade from the point of view of culture. So, hey, presto, I fixed fintech.
So it's effectively a personalized accelerator.
We call it coaching. It's just really intensive bootcamp coaching so that they can face the world out there.
I like that. And it's specific to a single project in the first instance?
99% of the time we would like to focus on Finovate, because I truly believe that once you've built a product that is amazing and you can show it and you can articulate it and you have met those bankers at that time, that's a very clear point of proof. Mm-hmm. In cases in which it's not going to be Finovate, they have some other reason to be in a hurry, maybe a POC, maybe wanting to enter an acceleration or an incubation product, same exact concept. It's just a question of, it's a product. It's a product that will make them win.
And I know you have direct experience in this, specifically with Finovate. Can you tell us about Memento and that experience?
Thank you for asking. It was an amazing, amazing process.
Effectively, just for the audience, you coached a fintech startup who was pitching at Finovate Europe.
Yes.
and they won Best in Show.
They did. Thank you. Essentially, they are an Icelandic company. I know it's like I have a niche, but I promise I do other types of companies as well, not only Icelandic. But they do have a very solid product that won Best App in Iceland and is already sold by one of the Icelandic banks. But what we've done for Finovate is take a very intensive mode of R&D and blue sky strategy and what is it that they're really going after and started accelerating that. And what they're going after is changing the way we connect money and social. And essentially, they provide the platform to allow banks to meet the customer where the conversation is and then do P2P payments within that conversation. I'm so excited about these guys. I mean, to be fair, and Liz knows this, there are some ingredients that will make people really successful or not. And I can't make people very smart or very hardworking. And they were all those things already. But if you have those in place, you still need a little bit of kick up your bum and some Finovate experience magic, and then that's it.
I think especially for Finovate, you know, having advice on what they want to see, because we've seen some howlers. So, yeah, there's a niche there.
Liz, and to the work that Startup Bootcamp does and rainmaking in terms of educating your ecosystem partners, the incumbent banks we were talking about before, are there any tangible examples of that? Is it conversations? Is it advice as to ways they can rethink specific procurement processes or organizational structures
Of the three banks that were partners with the London FinTech program, which were Lloyds Banking Group and Rabobank and Intesa Sanpaolo, I mean, they were all in sort of different levels of their innovation journey. But from, I don't know if I can go public with exactly what pilots each of them did, but the first year
Come on, we've all been given exclusives, yeah?
Well, I know, I mean, one of them, the Lloyds did do a pilot with one of our startups in 2015, Warpay. But, you know, in the first year, 2014, I don't think there were any pilots done with any of the banks. And then in 2015, there were about seven, I think, around. And then I think this year, last year, the 2016 demo day, in December 1st, 2016, five of the startups announced pilots with the partners on stage, which was a progression. You can see how the banking partners learned through the process. So we have seen... this is one of the reasons why we require our partners to sign on for 3 years, because it's not something you can try for a year. You will all the banks, any of the partners, they're at different stages of their innovation journey, and they're going to learn through that process, and they all have.
In very closely related news, I saw that Startup Bootcamp FinTech announced a Mexico City.
Mexico City, yes.
Which it's is what, your fourth or fifth?
So FinTech program runs in, London and New York are kind of on hiatus right at the moment, but Singapore, Mumbai. So Singapore just chose a cohort. They just went through selection days. Mumbai is in program right now. And then Mexico City is the most recent launch. And that's a joint venture with Finavista.
Duana, back to your news, because now I'm stuck on it. So tell me how this is going to work. There's Finovate in Europe every year. There's Finovate in the US every year.
And there's Finovate in Asia as well. Well, look, how it's going to work, there's still details that we're working on. I'm sadly not able to announce everything I'd like to, but hopefully there's a bigger partnership to be announced one day soon. The way it's going to work from my perspective is we're going to approach either startups that are going to be demoing, or most likely and most probably, since we're giving away the business plan, we're going to have these conversations with VCs. Everyone is trying to find their groove, but there's no way to contest the fact that once you have more knowledge, you're going to move faster and you're going to hopefully make more sales. We're going to be really conservative in who we're choosing as well. We have a lot of interest, but we'd like to evidently only kind of get into a conversation with people who we believe have a worthwhile vision and product, which means that we will a little bit curate as well from the point of view of, I mean, once you have people, not myself necessarily, but really good people in the FinTech Mafia kind of look at your proposition and believe they can make something out of it or not, that alone is the type of stamp of approval that it's difficult to get otherwise, I think. And also, one of the key things in this, and maybe the last thing I'm going to say, is here's very free advice for everyone out there. Before you decide to do any acceleration, any incubation, anything at all in FinTech, do more than Google for 5 minutes. Do a full day or 2 days of buying pizza and watching Finovate demos. until you get blue in the face. Because boring as they are, they will teach you what is out there in the industry. What if it isn't, then you should find out why they failed. It gives you the kind of education that, yes, you could need some curation to do, and accelerators and incubators and us can help you do that. But first and foremost, cost no money. Get on the archives. Do 2 days with Pita and Finovate and see where you come out the other side.
I think one of the most interesting concepts that has come out of this conversation is effectively the fact that there is no obvious solution, or at least we're not there yet. We haven't yet found the solution.
Anyone who claims, and I know Duane is a chief fixed fintech, and I do trust her, but anyone who says, I have the answer, they're lying. Yeah. This is, you know, I mean, I've been in financial information technology since 1994, but this whole fintech, you know, hashtag friendly, this is new. We don't have an archive of case studies and proofs to validate what's going on. So I don't think there's any bank that has solved this, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, the same way that we're seeing innovation in specific propositions, specific solutions, it sounds like we're also seeing it in the way that partnerships are built, that products are delivered to buyers, and it sounds like there's a lot of work left to do.
I mean, I honestly, and I'm usually not this way because I'm not a big fan of Amazon's going to be our bank in the future, but, you know, I haven't been publicly very bullish on TransferWise, but the recent partnership with Facebook Messenger and TransferWise, I think, is pretty significant. In fact, I noticed this a while ago. This is what I talked about, seeing the trends. About a year ago, a year and a half ago, I started seeing lots of people at hackathons build stuff with Facebook Messenger. And you'd say this to banks, and they're like, no, not Facebook. We don't do Facebook. I'm like, no, it's Facebook. You should pay attention to Facebook Messenger. Because Facebook, the woman who's in charge of payments at Facebook is ex-MasterCard. They are getting into the payments business fast and smart. And I think that's a real threat. You know, being able to pay people on the Messenger bot is something that I think you're going to be seeing a lot more of. And so if banks want to get into the payments game, or any sort of payments company, look at Facebook Messenger, because it's something that a lot of people use. And, you know, like Facebook are forcing it on people almost in a way. So look at that. Look at banking through Gmail. I think these things are not Silicon Valley dreams. They're things that these companies are actively working at, because companies like Google want all that transaction data. They want it very badly, and they're working hard to get it.
No, I think we're definitely starting to see what had been a concept, a dream in parts of the banking innovation world, of opening up banking to marketplace models, platform type models, breaking down these quote unquote walled gardens. And we're seeing that starting to happen pretty fast from places that we may not originally have thought it would come from.
Yeah. The threat's going to come from outside the industry.
I mean, I'm not going to say I told you so, but it's been years that I've been writing about this. I think, first and foremost, I mean, there's no question about it. Facebook is a bank. Google is getting there very fast. There are a number of things that are really in the making here. And they are things that are already present in your life. We don't need to adopt them. We don't need to wonder how we're going to get people to them. It's if anything, I think I get a sense of serious dread when I think about these things, because it feels like we're too late for everything. I can't imagine what it would feel like to be part of an innovation lab of a bank. I wouldn't want to be in a position where I'm slowly going ahead, trying to navigate my organization, and know in my heart of hearts that I'm too late to everything. Challengers could be too late to everything at this rate. The rest of us, we're entering a period of consolidation of the market without a doubt. It's a question of value that's going to come on top. It's a question of knowledge that's going to come on top. And a question of how fast can we react to things. And I think that's more than ever the case for banks. But it's also the case for the quote-unquote ecosystem and marketplace from here on as well.
Duane and Liz, where can people find out more about your work and connect with you directly?
You can go to www.rainmaking.io, and you can find out all about our work with all of our clients, including Lloyds Banking Group and Danske Bank, and many more to come.
Right, so either to www.annablomstrom.com or www.emotionalbanking.com or, yay, the not yet beautiful but on its way, finwinners.com.
Finwinners.com. All right. Well, Liz Lemley and Duane Blomstrom, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for tuning in to Rebank. If you like today's show, reach out. Follow us on Twitter at Rebank Podcast and join the conversation. For more on banking, fintech, and the future, check out our regular content at www.bankingthefuture.com.